We've got another amazing show for you this week. We're going to cover week two in the NFL. We're talking NBA, WNBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. We've brought in a special guest to talk Major League Baseball from the Calling Strikes podcast, AJ Torres, and a professional basketball player, Jory Davis. Plus, in the fix, we're talking overtime. Stay tuned for that. Week two in the NFL was another great one. We had some exciting finishes, really close games, some upsets, but not many. Our straight up picks were 16-0, a great week, obviously going perfect. An improvement from week number one, where we were 11-5. Watch us Wednesday night at 9:30 for Sports Fluent Fantasy Live. We're going to be talking NFL fantasy, plus giving you a sneak peek into our week three picks. But before we get into all of that, let's talk about some of the things that we learned in week number two. The Cincinnati Bengals, well, it looks like they found themselves a quarterback. The problem is, and we said this when the draft was about to happen, you remember we had Cynthia Freeland on from the NFL Network, and we talked about the needs of the Bengals, and they run deep. You saw Joe Burrow running for his life, taking a lot of hits. The offensive line is atrocious. Their defense isn't much better. They're going to have a hard time winning games this season. We knew that the answer to all of their issues wasn't a quarterback. However, they might have the quarterback for the next 10 years if he survives. You remember the Houston Texans years ago had David Carr. Yes, that David Carr, Derek's big brother. He got hit and was on the run so much that they knocked him right out of the league. Let's hope that doesn't happen to Joe Burrow. To the Bears. Ah, my Bears. I love them. 2-0. Big surprise. But let's not get carried away. They beat what's turning out to be a pretty bad Detroit Lions team and what's going to be an even worse New York Giants team. Let's see how they do against some stiffer competition. There's still issues with Mitch Trubisky. The defense, however, looks fantastic, and I'll say this every day until it happens. Please extend Allen Robinson. The Falcons. The Falcons head coach Dan Quinn is going to get a lot of the blame on the Falcons' collapses in the Super Bowls in the regular season because they have big leads and find ways to lose. That's got to be on the coach, and there might be a change coming in Atlanta. To the New York Jets. Who are the New York Jets? How much more can we talk about these guys? Adam Gase is a horrible coach. He's never been successful, not in Chicago, not in Miami, and definitely not as the Jets. He took Le'Veon Bell, one of the greatest running backs of all time, and made him insignificant. Obviously, he's now hurt, and they're going to try to have a backfield with Frank Gore in it. So let's say good luck to the New York Jets. Hope you enjoy your top five pick. The Buffalo Bills are another great story because this is their year to win their division. The Patriots lost Tom Brady, lost some pieces on defense, but are surprisingly good. If Cam can hold up the whole year, they're going to give the Bills a run for their money. But Josh Allen looks fantastic. Let's hope the Bills can keep it up for the rest of the season. The last thing I learned from week two is that the AFC West is going to be really fun to watch. At first, we thought Denver would be a team to watch for in terms of the wild card, but losing Drew Locke might have taken them out of contention. However, the two surprise teams, other than for me, who picked the Raiders to win this week against the Saints and picked them to be in the wild card, the Raiders and Chargers actually look a lot better than we expected. They're going to make that division interesting. Don't get me wrong, it's still going to be all about the Chiefs. We're talking wild card here. But still, the wild card is going to be fun. Again, I think the Raiders are going to have one of those wild card spots. And making that division, which was going to be a runaway Chiefs division, and it still might be, at least it's going to be a little more interesting. And I think the games are going to be a little bit closer, as shown this weekend. Look for Sports Fluent Fantasy Live, Wednesdays at 9:30 p.m. And let me know what your thoughts are on week two in the NFL. I've said before that I'm not a huge fan of the one and done kind of March Madness style of the early rounds of the WNBA. A team like the Connecticut Sun is in. My team to win it all, the LA Sparks, are out. And I think that has nothing more to do with the fact that it was one game. You see a lot of teams win the first game of a series and then, you know, lose four in a row. Take a look at in the NBA, the Portland Trailblazers against the Lakers just this year as a prime example. I think at minimum, it's 2 out of 3. I like 3 out of 5, I think, for the WNBA a little bit better. But I think that's a rule that should not exist ever in the playoffs in a sport like basketball. That being said, we're down to 4 teams. So we got a matchup between the Minnesota Lynx and the Seattle Storm. If you recall, when I made that pick of the Los Angeles Sparks to be in the final this year, or win the finals this year, excuse me, the one team that I said you had to look out for was the Seattle Storm. They have a lot of talent on that team. Sue Bird is playing great basketball. They're just a solid, solid team, and probably the best team, even including when LA was in it, probably just the best, most talented team in the WNBA. So as we're making our predictions right now, look for Seattle to come out of that series against Minnesota. To the second series, the surprise Connecticut Sun placing the Las Vegas Aces. The Aces went on a nice run to end the season, and we knew that they had that ability, and they showed it there at the end of the season more so than ever before, finishing the season up at 18-4, same record as the Seattle Storm. I like them coming out of a series. I think Connecticut can steal a game like they did against LA. They have that ability. They've got some confidence going now. But I still think the better team is Vegas. I think they come out of that series. And then look for Seattle and Vegas to go the distance. And I'm taking Seattle Storm to be your WNBA champions this year. Please send me your comments and let me know who you think's making it to the final. Next up is our interview with professional basketball player Jory Davis. We talk about her career and how it went from Indiana University to being drafted by the WNBA to playing overseas and now finding a home with my favorite international team, Olympiakos in Greece. Also, how she started WeVault, a place for athletes to take over their careers and their personal business. You can find them on WeVault.net. And here's that interview with Jory Davis.
I'm doing well, Anthony. I'm excited to be on the podcast. I feel like it's going to be a great conversation. So nice to be here and to finally kind of meet on this call.
Yes. We've had a couple of tries, so I'm glad we finally got together. So I want to start off kind of with your background. So I know that you're kind of from New Orleans, and how do you end up at Indiana?
Yeah, it's been a journey, but I'm born and raised in New Orleans, actually on the West Bank, so Harvey, Louisiana, specifically, right outside of New Orleans. And how I ended up in Indiana, first of all, on New Orleans, my mom, Mary, was working with Xerox at the time. He was actually on international assignment overseas in England. And so when they got married, I finalized my 8th grade year in New Orleans, and then I followed my mom and my stepdad to England for my freshman year of high school. Then from there, we went to Rochester, where my stepdad was living anyway before he went on international assignment, and finished high school there. And then that's where, because I was in England, a lot of, you know, my recruiting process my freshman year was kind of out of the window. So that's where a lot of people started to find me. And Coach Jack and actually Coach Wilson, two of the coaches that ended up being at Indiana, had the offer from Indiana. And it just felt right. The school and also the coaching staff checked off so many boxes. And that's kind of like the quick story of the journey of how I ended up at Indiana University.
So by the time you got to Indiana, you had already actually moved around then a little bit. So you kind of already had that international feel for the differences between, because one of the questions I was going to ask you was, so you're fortunate, right? You're at Indiana University, and then you get drafted by the Indiana Fever. So that's nice if you enjoy being in Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice to stay close. It's nice in general to get drafted.
Right, yeah.
What team it is.
Fair enough.
It's nice to get drafted in general, but it was even better to hopefully make that work and keep the, you know, the fans that I've been able to have support me in Indiana, you know, continue to be able to support me in the state.
Yeah. So tell me about that experience in the WNBA and then kind of into how you end up going, because I know that you played in a couple other countries after that internationally. How does that all come about? And what are some of the differences you found, obviously, playing in the U.S. for the WNBA and then playing internationally? Because obviously right now, for those that are paying attention, just my apologies, the internet's a little bit slow because you're right now in Greece. And I will say playing for my home team, Olympiacos, so I'm very excited about to talk to you about that. But how does that all come about and what are those differences you found?
So for women, when we get, you know, when we finish our college careers, the WNBA draft is immediately after. So I didn't have much time to prepare, and that situation is the same for young ladies to this day. And I was drafted, didn't even know. I was actually in class, and someone said, wait, 1 second, but I want to congratulate Joy for being drafted. And I was like, what? And then, like, as soon as he said that in class, I see my phone ringing, and it's my agent that I had recently decided to go with. Like, I think it had to be, like, two before that, or a week before that. And I was drafted. From there, of course, like any rookie, you know, I wasn't thinking business. I wasn't thinking what's going on the business side. I was just thinking, oh, I need to do my athletic part, get in the gym. And that's what I did. Tried to set up a workout since I was right there to go and meet Stephanie White and the staff. I set that up, got to the gym. All the doors were locked. It was dark. One of the managers for Indiana was also a ball girl and everything for the Fever. So, you know, they were all rooting for me. So she was like, I was like, hey, are you in there? Because I don't know where everyone is. And I got in there and they told me that, oh, they couldn't do the workout for some reason. But then later on, I found out that the truth of the reason was that they knew I was about to get cut, because the next day I got a call from the GM at the time and she said I was cut. So, yeah, I didn't really go through the WNBA process fully as I expected. I never really got a real chance, truthfully, to show my talent. And then my agent, of course, she was just like, this is normal, you know, don't worry about it. And that's when she presented me with the opportunity to go to Israel, which at the time was a very jam-packed league. It had some all-stars in that league, actually. Planette Pearson, Gia Perkins, just to name a few. Then he had a lot of younger stars that were in that league as well. So it was a good league, but you know, that's how my journey with the WNBA ended real quickly, and I kind of shifted my mindset to overseas basketball.
Yeah, because at that point, and obviously prior to the NBA, after college, there's not really a lot of opportunity, right, for female basketball players. In most cases, all the ones I've talked to have had, even the ones that were playing for years in the WNBA, had to go overseas to play a little bit. It seems pretty common. Obviously now there's a few more teams and it sounds like there's a few more coming, so that might change that dynamic a little bit. How do you transition from, or because you were playing high school in England, did you transition to kind of the European game pretty easily, or was there still a transition process that you found?
The transition process was fairly easy going to Israel to start, because the style of play in Israel. Mm-hmm. There at the time it was four Americans per team. So it was a lot of one-on-one. It was a lot of more ISO situations and kind of creating your own type of, you know, creating for yourself.
Right.
Basically. So that wasn't hard for me in the sense of basketball. The hard part was separating from team to, like, you're a professional and you are your own team in a sense. Right. Like, you have your team, but you also need to make sure you're doing what you need to do for your career. And that took some time because I came into it like we were a college team again, kumbaya, and, like, this is our goals. And that wasn't the case. I quickly realized, like, hey, if you don't be a little selfish, you won't make it. And that was kind of the part I had to figure.
Yeah, that that individual kind of business. Sorry, I was just gonna say that individual business side of things, where it's right. That's very different from college, right? Because you don't really have to worry about that individual, you know, contracts and those types of things in college. It's probably a good thing about it.
Yeah, you're not worried about that. Yeah. You're kind of truthfully in a box in college. A lot of those things are taken care of. A lot of the business side, you don't really get to hear about it. You just kind of in that box of be a team and these are the rules. This is our leader and this is your role.
Right.
Whereas when you get into the pro world, no one's going to put set things for you. You have to kind of figure that out and learn how to manage that on your own. And that's what, you know, I kind of, you know, quickly figured out in a sense.
Yeah. So from Israel, what does the journey look like? How do you now end up playing in Greece? I know you've only been there for, has it even been a week yet or a couple of days, I think, since you landed in Greece?
Yeah, it's been about, 3 days, 4 days. So it hasn't been very long. It hasn't been a week yet. But my journey, you know, was kind of up and down until this point. You know, this is my 10th year, it's the decade season. But I went through a couple. I've played, you know, for good teams, bad teams, medium teams. Kind of went through all the different issues you can go through overseas. And, you know, I played in Romania, Târgoviște, my second year, which actually, you know, I didn't get a job right after Israel. So I was at home halfway. I went over in Christmas. Then from Romania, played in Switzerland 2 years. And then I went from Switzerland, actually took the train after I finished my season in Switzerland to go to Italy and do a tryout. And that's how I got my first contract. I signed on the spot in Italy. And then I played three consecutive years in Italy, went to Valencia, Spain, went back to Italy. And then now I'm in Greece playing for Olympiacos.
So I got to tell you, growing up as a kid, so I'm Greek, obviously. I feel like I've said that to you a couple of times now, but my dad was a big fan of PAOK, which is probably another team you'll be playing against at some point. And just to, I think, upset him, I started cheering for Olympiacos, and that's how it's been since I was, you know, 4 years old. So once I heard that you had signed there, I was like, oh, I got to talk to her. This is fantastic. granted, that was soccer, and then it kind of, as I got older, we started watching more EuroLeague and the basketball side of things. But
right.
Are they treating you well? Have you picked up any Greek yet? Do we need to get you some lessons? Do we need to call up some of the relatives and get you hooked up? How you enjoying that first week?
Yeah. The most I have is Yassas and, you know, Kala. Kala I know is good. So now I have to learn everything that comes after it. But, you know, actually, one of my tattoos I got in Valencia is agape. And it's written in Greek. Because, love. You know, it was, agape love, unconditional love was, you know, it was, you know, from the Bible. So I put it in Greek. And so it's funny, like, you know, now I'm like, okay, now I really need to learn this language. So I do need some lessons, but it's been great. You know, we're close to the beach. Of course, Greece has great food. The people are very open, you know, similar to the Southern Italians. So when it comes to the life and everything, it's definitely good. The people are open, and, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what comes next. I'm excited to, of course, as always, meet new people. Just even outside of the sports world.
So the last thing, and I, you know, one of the, I think, important things that I wanted to bring you on and talk about is WeVolve. So you're the founder and CEO of WeVolve. Tell us, what's that about? How did you come up with it? And what is it going to be moving forward? What's the future plans and goals?
Yeah. So WeVolve came about actually during, it was my season overseas in Italy, and it was actually a great season for me individually. I actually led the league in scoring that year. However, you know, mentally and a lot of the things going on around me made me really recognize that a lot with the business side overseas was lacking. There was no real community. There was no really advocating for us. People still know nothing about sports that's ran overseas. And so I figured we needed something. So I kind of started to just write down my own pain points, my own struggles, the things I wish I had access to at that moment. And I started to just read more. And that's where I came up with WeVolve. My personal mantra is willingly evolving. So that's where it was like, we all need to be doing this as athletes, because ultimately that's the only way we're going to progress in the sports industry globally. Mm-hmm. So that's how I came up with the name WeVolve, which stands for We Evolve. And in a sense, WeVolve is a private networking and social learning platform for elite athletes to help them manage their athletic and professional careers. So we can just lead more enriched lifestyles. And whether that be athletically or professionally, and the platform is meant to help us manage all those pieces, especially the lost community of overseas athletes, because we don't have the resources that many of the pro sports in America has access to. Right. And there's three pillars to it. There's the player empowerment piece, the social piece, well, the off-court piece, and then there's the mentorship piece. And all of those pieces will have some technology to it that will help the player ultimately manage all three pillars in one place. And, you know, we will build community. The mission is basically simply to unite the collective. And uniting the collective includes current and those, the few athletes coming into the community from a global scale. And that's the starting point right now, is just to get us all united, because that was one of the biggest issues with everything. And so, yeah, the mission is to unite us. And then the vision, of course, is to unleash that power that comes from uniting us, you know, and that's, we would have more knowledge because we're in one place that we can share our struggles and share the things we've learned. You know, we'll have more power to advocate for ourselves because we're united. The things that come from us being united, that's the vision, ultimately. So that's the path we're on right now where we evolve. And we've just been slowly building a community, slowly figuring out the technology side and how we can connect everyone. And thus far, it's been a cool journey on my entrepreneur path. It's new. I'm a rookie in a new game. So,
no, I love it, and I think it's a great idea, because I think you don't. It's one of those things that you don't think about, right? When you're an athlete in the U.S. or Canada, and you go to a team and you're playing, you have that support system that, even if they're not close or in your same city, it's really easy to stay connected. You know, if you're in Indiana and, you know, your family's in Chicago or even New Orleans, like, it's still, you can stay connected with them. Whereas when your, you know, family's in Rochester and you're in Israel, that's a different, you know, it's tougher. You don't have that base. You don't have that support system. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great idea to bring that, because, you know, for everyone that I've talked to that's gone over and played overseas, that's the biggest thing. They say, hey, I love playing here. The people are great, but you're kind of, you know, you're alone, right? For a lot of the time, like, obviously other than teammates, but some of those teammates, especially if they're from there, they have families to go back to and other things, where you're coming from the US, let's say, to Greece, you probably don't have, you know, someone there for you to, you know, when you're having those bad days or when you have some time off, to, as great as it is maybe to travel by yourself sometimes, it's also good. You also need that support system for those downtimes. So I love what you're doing there, and I really appreciate it. How can people find WeVolve?
Thank you for the words. It's definitely needed, and it's definitely something, you know, I will continue to make sure we can execute the ideas behind the vision. They can find and learn more at WeVolve.net, www.weevolve.net. They can also really connect with us, with me directly via LinkedIn or JoryDavis32 on Instagram. Right now, those are the two main places you can find us. So definitely keep an eye out. And if there are any young athletes that are looking and thinking about overseas, please, you know, go to WeVolve.net, click build with us, and reach out, and we'll get back to you guys to help you definitely learn more and prepare yourselves before your senior year ends and you're struggling to find the process of how to get there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Joy, for your time. Let me know if anyone gives you any trouble there in Athens or in Greece, and I'll keep sending you over some ideas for things to order off the menu that that I love. All right.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Please, yes. Like, hey, if you have family here, I am all for anybody that wants me to come and taste some of their dishes or you know, any places that you suggest that aren't like the typical tourist areas, let me know. So I'm glad to know I have like someone that's a local in my corner.
You got it. I'll be sending you some ideas shortly. All right, again, thank you for your time. I know it's late over there, so I'll let you get back to it. It's been a pleasure.
In the NBA, we're down to our final four teams, and there's a couple of surprises. The Bucks are out, the Raptors are out, the Clippers are out. But it still doesn't mean we're not going to have two great conference finals and a really, really good NBA final. So everyone thought the Denver Nuggets were out after that Anthony Davis incredible three-pointer at the end of game two. However, the Nuggets, like the Nuggets do, came right back with a very decisive win in game number three. And now they're thinking, hey, we were 1 3-pointer away at the buzzer from being up on these Lakers 2-1. The confidence is there. Jamal Murray is playing incredible. Jokic is looking to be one of the best players in the league, let alone one of the best centers. And the Lakers are actually going to have trouble here. So I want to know your picks, Lakers and Nuggets, who you think is going to come out of there. But I will mention a couple of things. One, LeBron is kind of crying about not getting more votes, MVP votes. However, he's not even the best player on his team. How can he be the MVP of the league? I've seen him age right before our eyes this playoffs, and it's too bad. He's one of the greatest of all time. So let's see if they can hold on and beat these Nuggets. But I'm going to tell you, they were one of my early picks to make it to the finals, but they looked really tired at the end of that game. You saw Anthony Davis kind of walking up the court on offense, and I mean slow walking up the court on offense. And Denver just seems to be that team that just seems hungrier for whatever reason, because you would think the Lakers would be. But I think this is actually going to be the Nuggets series to lose. To the East, I told you this at the beginning of the bubble. The Miami Heat are the scariest team in the league, and Jimmy Butler is not getting anywhere near enough credit. They're up 2-1 on the Celtics. And the Celtics are deep and they're talented, and it looked like they imploded after the loss in game two, but bounced back to win game three, which is going to make this series a really fun one to watch. But I still think Miami's just on a run and they're going to come out of the top. So come out on top. So I'm looking for a Heat versus Nuggets matchup this year. Last year, the Raptors brought a title to Toronto, to Canada. And this year, will Jamal Murray, the Canadian, win a championship? Some off-the-court moves as well in the NBA. The Chicago Bulls signed Billy Donovan, who was recently fired from the Oklahoma City Thunder. At the time that it happened, or he was let go, or they mutually parted ways, whatever, however the story goes, that's a great hire. When he moved on from the Thunder, I said that was terrible. He took a team that wasn't even supposed to be in the playoffs. That was a lottery team. They traded away Russell Westbrook. They traded away Paul George. This team was looking to, you know, Chris Paul was only brought in as a moving piece to move him somewhere else for draft picks and some younger players. He stayed on board. The team built a great culture, chemistry, and that has a lot to do with the coach. He was my second pick next to the winner of Coach of the Year, Nick Nurse, to be Coach of the Year. Should have been Billy Donovan, and they let him go. I don't know why or what happened there, but this is a great move for the Bulls. And we're going to talk in a little bit with our baseball insider, AJ Torres. We are going to talk a little bit about basketball, and one of the teams that we talk about, it's mostly baseball, but we are going to talk basketball. And one of the teams we talk about as a New York native, about the New York Knicks. This is the type of thing, and this is the reason why the Knicks are the Knicks, and the Bulls are going to turn this around, because the Bulls made a great hire in Billy Donovan, and the Knicks made a horrible signing of Tom Thibodeau. I'm going to put this out there for whoever wants to hear it and whoever's listening, and maybe you can pass it on. Please, James Dolan, I beg you, I will be the Knicks general manager for 3 years for free, and I guarantee you I'll get you in the playoffs at least two of those 3 years. Please, because no one can run this team any worse. I promise you, I can turn things around for you, Knicks. Let me know. Now we move on to the ice and the NHL. The Stanley Cup playoffs are upon us, and it's the Dallas Stars against the Tampa Bay Lightning. When it was the Final Four, as you know, we picked Dallas and Tampa Bay. And the reason we picked Dallas was in the previous rounds and prior to the playoffs starting, as you know, we picked the Colorado Avalanche to make it to the Cup Final. That didn't happen because they lost to Dallas. So we're going with the team that beat our team. On the other side, however, Tampa Bay was a team that has just kind of been the favorite all season long, and they've lived up to expectations, and here they are in the finals. So what does Dallas need to do to beat the Lightning? Well, really, it's going to come down to one very, very key component, and that's goaltending. Their goalie had a .95 save percentage against Vegas in the conference final. However, they allowed 23 goals against the high-paced Colorado Avalanche. However, they were facing the backup goalie in Colorado just like they did against Calgary. So they've had some fortune that way getting through to the finals. This time around, they're going to be facing the league's best, if not one of the best, goalies in the NHL. A goalie that only has a 1.82 goals against average this postseason, not having allowed more than two goals in the past nine games. They will not be able to do what they did against Vegas, where they didn't convert on their chances that they had. This is a team where they're going to have to control the pace of the game. They're going to have to get tremendous goaltending, and they're going to have to convert those shots and those opportunities into goals because you just don't get many opportunities to score on Tampa. Tampa, on the other hand, is going to really just have to play their game. They've got the better goalie. As long as he plays to that ability. They've got the best, if not one of the best offenses in the game. They have stars at every position. And really, if they hold Dallas to, you know, one or two goals or less, let's say, their offense should be able to get enough chances, much like Colorado did and Vegas did for that matter. They're just going to have to be more efficient and turn those opportunities into goals. They should win this, and they should win it in probably six games against Dallas, just because they are the more talented team. They're the better defensive team. They're the better offensive team, and they actually have the better goalie. Unless Dallas goalie can find his way to kind of stand on his head and steal a couple of games, look for the Tampa Bay Lightning to be this year's Stanley Cup champions. The baseball playoffs are upon us. As you know, not big fans of the 60-game season, not big fans of the extra innings rules, really not big fans of what baseball has decided to do this year in terms of how many teams make it into the playoffs. I've got a lot of issues, let's say, with Major League Baseball this year. I haven't been shy to express those feelings. So I thought I'd bring in a guest to help me go through what has happened throughout the regular season, some of the decisions that Major League Baseball has made, what to look for in the playoffs, and what we should be ready for this offseason in MLB. So this week, from Calling Strikes podcast, we have the host, AJ Torres, joining us to talk some baseball. Here's that interview with AJ.
This week, we have a special guest, AJ Torres, part of the Worst Take Network, and his weekly baseball show, Calling Strikes. AJ, how you doing?
I'm doing very good. How about you, Anthony?
I'm doing fantastic. There is so much to talk about in baseball right now, but I want to go back to the beginning. So when COVID hit and they stopped the season, we weren't sure if there was even going to be a season. A lot of talk about maybe calling the season off completely, working on the CBA, and just coming back next year stronger than ever. Obviously, they tried to put a season together, and they put together this 60-game schedule. For me, I think that isn't enough games to really tell you who's the best team this year. What are your thoughts on the 60-game season?
I mean, you kind of said it yourself. I hate it. And the main thing is you're going to get it through at least two or, you know, hot and cold streaks apiece. I mean, before the Yankee second hot streak, they want Aaron Boone fired. And if you go by just cut and dry saying, hey, after 40 games, a manager was cut and relieved of his duties in his last year, it's like, are you crazy? Cut and dry like that, 40 games? That's a quarter of a season in regular baseball terms. Between injuries that are really just wild, the cold streaks of all these stars, even former MVPs or ones that are top in the voting, and I just hate this format of who's making the playoffs. This is not the NBA. Why are there eight teams apiece making it? What is this, participation trophies? I can't stand it.
I was going to ask you about that next. So the 16-team playoff, I thought, as bad as the 60-game regular season was, having 16 teams in the playoffs really even diminishes the value of those 60 games, right? Because you would think with fewer games, you should really give a bonus to the people who did really well in those 60 games, and really they're not. Eight teams is a lot for a baseball playoff.
Absolutely. Because if you look at it this way, right, they're complaining about the wild card scenario being like, hey, this should be a five-game series. But everyone's joked around being like, hey, if you want this completely fair for everybody, we could be here until Christmas.
Right. And that's – listen,
nine months of baseball, 12 days of Christmas, I mean, a little much, don't you think?
Listen, I was – as bad as it sounds, I was one kind of screaming that maybe they should just cancel the season completely, figure out the CBA, and come back next season. Or, right, if they were to do some type of – I don't want to call it a bubble because not in one location, but if they just played games in kind of the warmer climate, right, they could play deeper into the year. There were some teams right out of the gate, speaking of COVID, like the Marlins. Did you ever think when the 60-game season started that they wouldn't finish?
I mean, I just kind of thought I really just didn't know what could happen. I mean, really, because if we go into the trade deadlines, which the trade deadline I didn't really get for the Marlins, I guess. I mean, maybe that's just me. But going forward, as far as COVID and the CBA, I mean, between Tony Clark and the commish, that was just a bloodbath. I mean, I hope that this offseason, what they need to do is instead of phone calls, emails, I don't care where it is, it could be HQ, it could be somebody's house, get a hotel room, get a conference room or something. I don't care if you order lunch, I don't care if you stay all night. You need to be face-to-face and just get it done. Because instead of 2 months, this might be done in 2 to 3 days.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of pettiness on both ends. And some people are like, oh, season's got to be canceled. Don't buy a jersey. But it happened. But this is just not what we wanted. There's a lot that's going to go into this year, including, you know, the DH rule. I think it's going to stay. It's just, it's a complete mess. But I look at the who's in it if the season were to end today, and I could name at least one team where I could say you do not deserve to be here.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I noticed, right? Like, to your point earlier, the Yankees looked like they weren't going to be in the playoffs. They go on a little streak, they're in. My Jays look like they were in the playoffs, then go on a 6-game losing streak, and now it's 50-50 if they're going to be in. When we talked about this at the beginning of the season, we said a minimum of 80. Do you have a minimum number that they need to be playing in a season?
It's really hard to go off of 162 and see what goes there. But I mean, 100 would be preferable, but I guess you could settle for half.
Yeah.
And my only thing is the injuries too. I actually had this thought process. I'll give you my favorite to win, but it's kind of iffy as time goes on with it for the playoffs. But if you could think about it this way, right? If you wanted to, let's say, fight for a spot to get in, the way you could do it, right? If you were solid with your and happy with your five-man rotation, take the fifth starter out, and if he could go in the bullpen, because instead of using up your relief pitchers, you throw him in there.
Yeah.
Depending on the bullpen, you do it like the Milwaukee Brewer style, you might be able to get these wins and get in there. The last couple of spots for the National League are tough. As far as the American League, the Jays have a couple of games on the Angels. I actually think they're going to get in. The only problem is, if you have the eighth spot, they're playing Tampa. Which, another thing that's just terrible about this, is if you have a hot and hungry wild card team in the fifth spot playing the one spot, I'm okay with that. But in every single time where you have the eighth seed's playing the one seed, particularly in the NBA playoffs, do you watch it, or are you just going to be like, it's a wash, I'm going to bed?
Yeah, I think the only time we watched it was maybe this year, because we thought Portland would make more noise than they did. But yeah, typically,
I didn't think Portland would win, but I just thought they would make it entertaining. Like, yeah. I thought if anyone else went there, like the Grizzlies, I mean, I'm on the East Coast, just like you, and were we going to stay up to watch a game that's not going to be entertaining?
No, I would not stay up for Grizzlies Lakers. No, I probably wouldn't have done that.
No, not me, brother.
Yeah, I hear you. So, okay, so let's get to those teams. So, when we're kind of starting, I picked kind of the Dodgers. They're the easy one to say, hey, they'll probably be in the World Series. Some others said kind of the Cubs. The Yankees are always in the conversation.
I can't say that about the Yankees. I can't. I'm a Yankee fan. Say that. The expectation is there, but if you look at it, right, I have no idea what's in the water, but if you look at it, now, ever since, if I can remember, 2012, there's always just been these handful of injuries. I mean, we've had, Teixeira, Derek Jeter, CC Sabathia, all these injuries. It's like, hey, we have half a team here. And what they did was they actually changed the trainer, because they actually fired him 2 years earlier, because they're like, okay, we've had 30-some-odd guys hurt this year. Who do we go to? And it's just like, look, the trainer, sorry, we've poked with you enough, time to go. Now, the biggest thing that I've seen, especially guys like Aaron Hicks, if Aaron Hicks and Aaron Judge, who have 5 inches different height, have the same muscles, like the same muscle mass in the arms, mm-hmm. Isn't that a problem?
It could be.
These guys are bulking so much, bulking up too much. I was at the game before they clinched last year. I had tickets. And the reason why they lost to the Angels and they didn't have Mike Trout or Otani, everybody was trying to do too much. Right. From DJ to Glaber, everybody trying to do too much.
All right, so we're not high on the Yankees. How are we feeling? Okay, so we had – what about the Dodgers? Are we high on the Dodgers? Do we still think they look good, they can make a run?
Actually, it's funny because in the free agency, I kind of looked at it as in like, okay, you just want to win the division title again. But then next thing you know, the Mookie Betts trade went, and I'm like, oh, hey, okay. Then David Price went out, and I'm like, okay, what's going on? Now, the thing that really bothers me about this playoff format is if you go into the later rounds, because before it would be an off day here and there.
Right.
You can't go 3-man rotation anymore with your guys properly rested. If you do, your stars are going to be on 3 days rest. Because if you remember 2009, there was Andy Pettit, CC Sabathia, AJ Burnett, 3-man rotation all the way down. Last year, after Scherzer started, because it wasn't a dependable bullpen, they put in Patrick Corbin in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And I believe he had a start later on. You can't do that the way this is formatted. So you got to use all your starters. You can format the way you want to. But how the bullpen is going to be used, that goes case by case. Like the Phillies, they have the worst bullpen in baseball. I know they trade for a couple of guys, but it's hard to improve on garbage. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. So, and this is because now they're going to play neutral site, correct, in the playoffs.
Well,
so there's not going to be as many travel days.
The thing that I got is we're going to have both Texas locations. So it's going to be the new Rangers Stadium, the Astrodome, and that's the National League teams playing in the AL.
Yeah.
And the National League is going to be playing in the Padres Stadium and the Dodger Stadium. And out of all the ballparks, right? Like, if we take my New York Yankees again, right? The easiest ballpark to hit in is the Dodger Stadium, I think, because there's no weird dimensions. If you look at the new Rangers Stadium, the ball does not travel well. The Padres' left field is huge. And the Astrodome, we've known forever, that center field is big.
Yeah.
So if you go by dimensions, just the field in, if you're a fly ball pitcher, you'll love it. If you're a short hitter, you know, you like the short porch, I mean, I think you might struggle with it. The only other thing I might think of is that if the season ended today, the Twins and Yankees would face each other. And if you're a Twins fan, well, grab yourself a drink, say a prayer, and good luck to you. Because we know how that's been happening the last couple of years. Poor Minnesota fans.
So those were the favorites. Before the season, we had one team. We looked at the White Sox as kind of being a sleeper team. So they're going to be in the playoffs. Any sleeper teams you think that maybe a lot of people aren't talking about, but they have a legitimate shot this year?
You know, in the National League, it's very hard to predict, particularly because if we go by the fifth seed onward, between the fifth seed being the Marlins, it's 28 wins. Ninth place right now, tied for ninth place, is 26. So literally, that's anybody's game. I mean, the Padres, the only thing that I think is going to be stopping them anytime soon, I think the Padres' rotation, they're going to have to mix up a little bit. I don't like Chris Paddock starting in the very beginning, per se.
Yeah.
I'd like I'm going between Lamet and Clevinger. We'll see how they shape and form it. The Cubs, I actually think really high on. I thought that was what I was going off of. I talked about how Yu Darvish has really bounced back. Now, how does somebody bounce back at 34 years old? We found out that the Astros cheated. So after that, they gave him a pass because there was that absolute meltdown where he didn't make it out of the first inning, if I'm correct. And then he has a horrible first year at the Cubs, and he's hurt for the most of the year. He only made 40 innings, I think like eight starts or something. Not great. Then last year, does okay, not great. And now he might be winning the Cy Young, which – short season, 60 games. But if you look at his mechanics, what you do is you focus just on certain pitches. I mean, that guy could throw anything. But he's moving his fastball. He's moving it to cut in on right-hand hitters, and he's freezing them.
Right.
So if you could locate that fastball east, west, or north, south, that's what he's been focusing on. That's been his money.
So we like the Cubs, and I do like
the Cubs. I like the
Cubs
as well. Except the injuries.
Yeah.
Like Chris Bryant apparently has an oblique, and that's – I'm sorry, but I mean, anytime you see an oblique, it's trouble. And then as far as the rotation, I think it's been solid, but there's questions with Quintana and Chatwood. Do I trust John Lester in the postseason? Yes. Do I like Yu Darvish right now? Yes. Those guys are great at the top. Kyle Hendricks, I like there as your three guy, but your four and five might have a little trouble. I mean, that guy that threw the no hitter, I mean, he's just inexperienced, so I can't really say, but watch out for the Cubbies, particularly if they're going to be facing a seven seed, which that might be a complete walk in the park for them the way this is looking.
Yeah. So if I had to, you know, kind of gun to your head, you had to pick, and we'll have you back on when the playoffs start so you can change your mind. But as of today, if you had to pick, this is going to be the World Series matchup, or AL-NL maybe. Who are you going with?
Gun to my head, if I had to go with – can I do the pennant games? Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah, you could do that for sure.
AL and NL pennant. Man. This is going to be a tough one. For National League, I want to be between the Cubs and the Padres, if that's formatted correctly. I think one of those two might do it because the Dodgers just don't have that reputation. I think the pitching is going to kill them, I think. In the American League, you know, I'm not going Rays because the magic's not going to last forever.
Okay.
I could go into a whole section of how they have what I call the suicide pitching. That I could go forever about how they're doing it. Don't sign any free agents from Tampa, by the way.
Well, we know how you feel about Florida teams, so we'll move on from that one.
that's actually just the way that the pitching goes in the format.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate all Florida teams because most of them aren't run well. Right. That's why. Oakland just doesn't have it. They always choke. Cleveland, they're inconsistent offensively. I'm going Chicago White Sox because everything else, I know a lot of these AL teams.
So Chicago, you're just saying Chicago's – you got White Sox just winning it, or who are they playing in the pennant?
I'm just going to go White Sox for the American League.
Just White Sox.
It doesn't matter who they play. I just think that everybody else, I mean, I think they're just hot. I think they got the pieces. The bullpen shined quietly this year. And everybody else has just had concerns.
So we're not going Yankees, Blue Jays? We really should be biased, no?
You actually got a solid chance. But if I were you, I don't know. You tell me, would you rather play Tampa right now or would you rather play the White Sox right now?
Oh, yeah, Tampa.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm listening to you saying the Magic can't last forever. So I'm hedging my bets.
That's fair. That's fair. And trust me, if you do get there, please beat Tampa, somebody.
All right. I'm going to let you end it on kind of your final thought on this season and tell us where we can find Colin Strikes.
Colin Strikes, you can find on the Worst Take Network, just so you can see everybody else who's putting a lot of time and effort on all their articles, their podcasts. As far as what I think of this season, I'm actually glad it happened. There's been a lot of misfortune. We've seen a lot of injuries, a lot of players not do well. We're going to see the commissioner and the union go head-to-head again. We might see the National League DH stay here for good, which is going to impact the World Series this year. And that's going to be the first time it affects the World Series. That is going to be a controversial topic for a lot of people. Going forward, these are not really hitter-friendly ballparks outside Dodger Stadium that these teams are playing in. The other stadiums, the ball does not travel well. The outfields could just be huge. And it's going to be an exciting playoff run. But going forward, I really just like the five teams going in apiece. None of this participation trophy or letting the good teams get off easy. And I just hope next year that all this is under control and we're going full steam ahead in the free agency.
All right, Anthony? So kind of bonus coverage then. So I'm going to ask you kind of a couple of rapid-fire things because in that you made me think of a couple of things. Do you think they get a deal done or is there a strike looming?
They have to get done because if you have a strike and you're trying to get the CBA done, it's just going to be bad for everybody. It's going to be bad for the networks. It's going to be bad for the league. It's going to be bad for the players, the agents. That is what nobody wants. So these men have to get themselves composed, quit being babies, sit down, and talk like men.
Two, you said the DH rule you think is going to stick. AL, NL moving forward. Any other rule changes that you think are going to happen or should happen?
My only thought, and there's a lot of people that have argued about this. Now, do I hate the playoff format? I've said that many times. I absolutely do. The DH is technically in. People have been liking it, regardless of how pitchers could rake. But, I mean, nobody wants a guy having maybe at best a 200 average. So I think the DH is staying. The one rule that was added that I cannot stand and people have fought me on is the three batter rule. Now, in the postseason, we might see guys, you know, blow it because of that. Now, I get it. Guy faces one batter, and then regardless of it's an out or if it's a walk, base hit, home run, whatever, he gets yanked and the next guy goes in. Now it's three or you finish the inning. I want to see if they could bring it down to two. I think that's fair. Guy faces two batters no matter what or finishes the inning. That can't hurt. I mean, three, I mean, think about it. Bases loaded, you pull a guy, he gives up a base hit, you can't yank him, he's got to face two more batters no matter what. That's
yeah, not gonna be fun. Yeah, I think wasn't the argument for that was, right, we got two with too many kind of specialty pitchers almost where I'm bringing in this guy to face the lefty, that guy to face the righty, right? And it was slowing down the game. Like, that was the argument for it. But I see your point. If you're forced to do it, it kind of takes away from.
And I had one more, and that is, now tell me how you feel about this. The extra innings rule where the guy starts on second base, I think is absolutely stupid.
That is a terrible, terrible rule. And if I take it a step further, and I get a lot of grief for this, because I think for every sport, during the regular season, if you're done, your game is done, it's a tie. I don't like overtime at all in any sport.
Really?
It's the regular season. You play nine innings, it's a tie. Move on. Let the player safety is important, right? You're killing players by making them play extra innings. However, in the playoffs, you just for baseball.
The playoffs is different. Matter, of course.
Yeah, playoffs it matters, right? In the regular season, it doesn't matter. So why are you putting these guys who are bigger, stronger, faster through, you know, into this situation where they're just playing extra, like some of these extra inning games are going, they're getting crazy, or in other sports as well. So I say you get eliminated in the regular season. It allows you to manage your teams better. I think you'll have less injuries. And then in the playoffs, no, it's like starting a football team on the 50 yard line and saying, okay, you got to score a point. Well, yeah, they're probably going to get at minimum a field goal. I think in the playoffs, you play an inning, right? In football, you play a quarter. In, you know, basketball, you play a quarter. And if it's still tied, okay, then you play another one. I hate sudden death. I hate penalty kicks or penalty shots. I don't like any of that stuff because that's not the game.
That might be a worse take we could talk with Matt McConaughey about sometime.
We might. I think
As far as overtime, I like the hockey overtime, I will say.
Yeah, but if you think about it, penalty shots, that's not the game. It's just
well,
not.
I mean, I like the new 3-on-3 format.
Okay, that it's exciting, right?
And but then, again, I mean, afterwards, I mean, you got to end it. It goes into a different points system. I mean, you need a winner in those. I understand where you're coming from, though.
Yeah, I think if player's safe, right? Like, I look at it from that point. If that's important, then that's a way to do it in the regular season to cut down on the amount of time that they're playing, the minutes they're playing, innings that they're playing. To answer your question, I hate the gimmicks. So as you could tell, I'm a little bit passionate about this one. Like starting a runner on second, I think that's ridiculous. Any type of gimmicky thing, I don't like
it. My team won off of that one time. I actually saw this. It was DJ LeMahieu started at second base. It's a pass ball. He's on third. Now there's no outs, of course. Luke Voit hits a fly ball center field. DJ LeMahieu basically walks in. And it's a walk-off. And I'm like, okay. I didn't feel that energy that he earned it. It wasn't a bomb.
Did you feel you won? Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I won and I was happy it was over. I mean, it was only the 10th inning, I think. But I'm just kind of like, you know, this rule sucks because the energy's different.
Yeah.
Now, as far as player safety, I understand where you're coming from. But just remember this, right? If the game is – now, there's some teams, right, where every single win counts, particularly later on. But if it's in, like, let's say June, per se, right, the trade deadline's not here. You don't know if you're a buyer or a seller, right? If you want to give this up so you could rest your bullpen for tomorrow, it's simple. What do? You could literally lob the ball and have the guy hit over the fence. You can throw that game if you want to.
On the flip side, and if you have a lot of ties and you need a win to make it into the playoffs or for seeding or whatever, are you not, you're not thinking, hey, let me just get through the ninth inning and see what happens. You're actually, or in other sports as well, you're not just trying to run the clock down, you know, to let the fourth go because you know you're in, you're going to make it, you're going to be in overtime. You're making a concentrated effort to win that game. I think it actually makes the games even more competitive knowing that, you know, you want to win. You don't want to tie, but if you know that that's going to be the outcome, I don't.
There's some teams that would love to tie, particularly in football right now, but I get you.
Yeah, well, in football, you know, no matter what they've done with overtime, everyone's complaining. They're never going to make everyone happy.
Oh, there's some people, particularly people over here in New York and New Jersey, they'll never, ever be satisfied. That's Knick fans, that's Yankee fans, that's Met fans. You speak to a lot of them over here. There's a lot of them. They will never, ever be satisfied.
Well, as a Knick fan, you don't have much to be satisfied about, but we'll leave it on that note. Or actually, wait. Actually, I will ask you because you're close enough. You're in New York, right? So the Knicks. I know we're talking baseball, but the Knicks. What are you hearing? What's going on? Like, what are Knick fans like? Are you just, I'm a Yankees fan and I leave the Knicks to do their thing? Or, you know, do you have an opinion on the Knicks?
I'm not a big Knicks fan, but I am a Rangers fan. But it's actually very different because when it comes to basketball, right, he's very hands-on. But when it comes to my New York Rangers, it seems like he has somebody else call the shots. And it's very weird because usually you have one guy that does both. One guy that's just like, hey, I'm involved here and such like that. But when you hear Rangers, you don't hear James Dolan's mouth.
Right.
When it comes to basketball, here's the thing that I don't get, right? You've been connected all these years, right? Now, I remember this being when I was a kid, right? You've been linked to all these free agents from LeBron James to Kevin Durant to Kyrie Irving. Chris Paul, Chris Bosh. There's some of these that have been named twice. LeBron's been mentioned at least twice.
Every time
Kyrie's
he's a free
been
agent.
Mentioned. Anthony Davis has been mentioned in a trade, and that would be the grand prize. Giannis has been talked about. All of these top caliber players, and you've only had one come to the Garden, and that is Carmelo. Okay, right. So you've hit what? 1 out of 50? And then free agency, right? You basically, I mean, come on. You expected Julius Randle to be like Julius Irvin. No disrespect to Julius Randle, but you're putting the world on that man's shoulders. And the thing is, too, right? And I say this with football, too, because if you're going to tank, you're going to have to draft well. Nil Aquina, averaging 6 points a game. And he's your first round pick. That's a bust. Average 6 points for 3 years in a row. That's a bust. Knox, the guy supposed to be starting, he's on your bench for the most part in as a second year. Come on. If you're not going to draft guys, at least trade those draft picks to get a star here. And then if nothing works, because if you've noticed that, right? Because you know how some people say, trust the process.
Well, it didn't work, but yes, they were saying it.
James Dolan is trying to flip the switch in half a year, and it doesn't work like that. They got a coach now that signed to a 4 to 5 year deal, I think.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that hire? Because I was pretty outspoken about against it.
They needed somebody. They needed somebody good with experience.
But for a young team?
I actually think this, right? The number one thing that they could only benefit with is the length. Because now, mind you, next year and the year after, David Fizdale's getting paid. He's not going to do that again.
Yeah.
You have a guy that's a veteran in coaching. It doesn't matter, young guys, experienced guys. You need some commitment. You need to crawl, and then you learn to walk, and then you learn to sprint. This guy has trouble crawling right now, let alone walking. So get things intact, right? And instead of trying to flip the switch to, oh, we need to be good again, you're not doing the job. Okay, let this get him through the free agency. Get him through the draft. And since you don't draft well, you might want to consider trading that pick.
Right.
For somebody. Get this year under control, don't have expectations, and you go from there. Change the culture of that place. And it's hard to change a culture when that guy, people have been wanting him gone for, what, close to a decade now?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for me as a basketball fan, right? Because it still has that mystique, right, of being the Mecca. And the teams just don't live up to that. It's tough.
And I've been to TD Garden. And if you want to go with this New York and Boston rivalry, I got news for you. You go over TD Garden. If you're a Knicks fan, and now mind you, I recommend going in neutral clothes. I know how the Boston crowd goes, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you see the culture over there, right? You see the fans cheering. You see how the way that it goes there on the court. You should get with your Knicks buddies, go there. You'll be ashamed of yourself. James Dolan should go there and be ashamed of himself. Being like, wow, look at this place. You know, the team that was better without Kyrie Irving on the court.
Yeah.
Better when some guys were hurt. I mean, Gordon Hayward, the big free agency, I mean, they had to do it without him.
It's funny how that team always seems
they
to
just
get better.
Rotate all yeah. these guys. I mean, just remember, wasn't Tatum drafted before Lonzo Ball?
After.
I thought it was before. I thought they had the first round.
No, yeah, I think it was Fultz. I think it was Fultz, Ball, and then Tatum.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
But still, if you look at it, right, we don't think of him as, oh, he's the best guy in the draft class. We don't go back and say, oh, this guy, that history, third pick. No. Because there's so many good guys around him, there's no need to bring that up. Those guys just have a well-oiled machine that produces guys. Somebody else is scoring more points, one night. One night's Tatum. Then Smart might have a night. Then, you know, Gordon might come clutch. It just happens. They just have a great organization on the field and off. And if you're a Knicks fan, which I'm not, but I know some are, you look at that and I can't believe that you could – how do you wear the Knicks blue and orange? How do you do that? How do these people buy the tickets that – now, mind you, of all the sports tickets, right, they're the hardest to get in the whole entire city. How do you buy them when you see this garbage for years?
Well,
I can't fathom it.
I'm going to tell you, and this we're going to end it on this because I'm in a city in Toronto where we have a team that plays hockey, and they don't play it that well. They haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967.
They've had a couple good years though.
Yeah, it's the hardest ticket to find. They've been sold out for about 100 years, but they just don't perform. But it's the history. It's that mystique, and I think. The Knicks,
they still have that culture.
I think
the
it's
Knicks
starting
don't
to go
have
away.
Culture.
I think it's starting to go away, but they still, you know, I think the Knicks and the Leafs in that case still have this kind of historical luster. It might be starting to fade a little
well,
bit more.
But
for the
aren't
Knicks.
The Leafs still run well? I mean, you fired Babcock because they didn't think it was getting it done, but you were in the playoffs.
Well, we were in the qualifying round of the playoff. Yeah, it's been tough. There's been some bad years here. Yeah, every once in a while they'll make it into the playoffs just to keep fans coming in, but they seem to make the wrong decisions more often than not. But on that
most organizations. Well, yeah. I mean, we could battle that. We'll table that for now.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely have you back on because we got some football to talk about. We're going to obviously talk about some baseball, but as far as the baseball goes, I appreciate the time, AJ. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Everybody, don't forget to check out Calling Strikes on the Worst Take Network and obviously the Sports Fluent podcast also on the Worst Take Network. Thanks, AJ, man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you much.
Now for the fix. This week in The Fix, we're talking about something that, as you heard in the last segment in my interview with AJ Torres, is something that, as you could tell then, that I feel very strongly about. And I know that I get a lot of grief for this opinion, but I feel like I just want to express it again and again and again, because it really doesn't make sense to me. I get that sports are about winning, but they're about winning championships. And one of the main concerns that I hear over and over again in every sport is about player safety. And you hear LeBron James as he's getting up there in age. You hear it about Kawhi Leonard. You hear it about, you know, football. You see them subbing players in and out all the time. Player safety, load management, ways of, you know, keeping their players safe and healthy so that the biggest stars can be playing in the biggest moments. That all makes sense to me. So then why, and this is where the contradiction comes in, if that is so important, then why are we playing overtime? Why are we playing overtime in football? Baseball, it seems to be, you know, it's either 9 innings or 14 innings. Hockey, they've had to come up with gimmicks like penalty shots and, you know, 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 1-on-1. Basketball, right? Double overtime, triple overtime. No one's playing really to win in those situations when it's close. They're almost playing for like, hey, let's get a tie and get into the next overtime session. But really, do we need overtime? We have overtime in the NFL and we still end up with ties. What happens in the NFL, we all complain, not me, but we all complain about the overtime rules. You know, both teams should get the ball. You know, now in baseball, as we discussed, the runner starts on second. I already talked to you about, you know, penalty shots in hockey, penalty kicks in soccer. If there's no reason, if it's the regular season, let the game end in a tie. You've played 3 periods, 4 quarters, 9 innings, 2 halves, whatever it happens to be, ties are okay. In the regular season. Let me be very clear. I'll say it again. In the regular season, a team can have 4 ties, 10 ties. It doesn't matter. There's ways of, right? It's their record is still their record. And it's going to be based on who has the most wins, who has the best winning percentage, and ties can be calculated into that. In hockey, where I guess it's a point system, it's still based on, right? I think it's even simpler. 2 for a win, 1 for a tie, 0 for a loss. Pretty simple, if you ask me. It keeps the players, and be it in baseball, pitchers and hitters, hockey, obviously the players, they keep them from playing those extra minutes. I remember a stat, granted it's from the 60s, but where Wilt Chamberlain played like 48.6 minutes a game in a 48-minute season, or 48 a game that has only 48 minutes. It's because he played every minute of the game and every overtime. Guys, girls, those days are done. Nobody plays the whole game anymore. So why add extra innings? There's no reason. Why have overtime in the regular season? It's really just say, well, that team won and that team lost, right? Well, it doesn't matter. In the playoffs, now here's a different side to this, right? In the playoffs, of course, you need a winner of the game. Actually, let me pause and go back a step. If a team really needs to win, so if a team is in a position where they need to make the playoffs, or they want to be the number one seed to get a bye, or whatever it is, and they need a win to do that. A tie just doesn't do it. They're going to give that extra bit of effort that they have or can to get the win. It actually makes the sport become more competitive. So I don't think you lose anything in the regular season that way. In the playoffs, let's solve overtime in the playoffs for every team or for every sport. Here, it's pretty simple. In football, you play an extra quarter. Each team's going to get the ball unless a team can run out 12 minutes of the clock or 15 minutes of the clock and, you know, not let the other team get the ball. Probably very unlikely to happen. So they play a full quarter and you see, hey, who can win that quarter, right? We went 4. We couldn't win, you know, we didn't get a winner there. So in the playoffs, we're going to play 1 full quarter to get a winner. And guess what? If you need to shorten the quarters, maybe, you know, to 10 minutes or to 7 minutes, whatever the case may be, you can shorten them. Or if you want to shorten them as each overtime goes on. So the first quarter's 15, the second one's 10, and then it goes 5-5-5-5-5 until you get a winner. I'm okay with that too. But it eliminates the, you know, both, you know, the sudden death or, you know, I'm talking a lot about football. I know I'll get to the other sports, but if you get a touchdown, you win. But if you kick a field goal, then the other team gets the ball. And then if they get a field goal, well, then you get the ball back again. But if they score a touchdown, they win. Oh, but if the defense scores a touchdown, okay, then all rules are off. Huh? Let's just make it the game. In hockey, you play an extra period. Again, you want to shorten the periods? Shorten the periods. But play the game. It's not 3-on-3. It's not 4-on-4. It's not a shootout. A shootout is like a skills challenge. That is not the game. That doesn't decide which is the better team. And the whole point of overtime and the whole point of playing games and winning games is to determine who's the better team at that sport. Not at penalty kicks. Not at penalty shots. Right? At that sport. 5-on-5. Now, if you get a penalty, et cetera, et cetera, and there's a power play, completely different animal. So you play an extra period. Again, you can play with the length of time, but everyone has an opportunity to win in the actual sport. Same with baseball. Baseball has overtime, right? They play an extra inning, and each team gets their three outs. They get their at-bats. They're in the field, and off you go. They've got it right. Don't change a thing. Just don't do it in the regular season. You already play, other than this season, you already play 162 games. If it's tied at the end of 9 innings in the regular season, let it be. Playoffs, play your extra innings just as you would. So that's my piece. That's the fix. Let's make some more ties in the regular season, and let's play the actual game in the playoffs. That's it for this week's episode of the Sports Fluent Podcast. Remember to check us out on sportsfluent.com. Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at sports_fluent, and on YouTube, search Sports Fluent. Until next week, are you fluent?